The Ball Year Round podcast is brought to you by Essential Coaching, allies in holistic coaching and educational program development. Essential Coaching aims to produce exponential generational change by creating the deepest connected coaching community in the world. Your pain points are real, coach, and Essential Coaching wants to help you feel more fulfilled and happier in your career. Join coaches and educators spanning three different continents for real, relevant, and necessary professional development. If you'd like more information about Essential Coaching, visit their website at www.essential-coaching.net. Again, that is www.essential-coaching.net. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, everybody, to Ball Year Round Podcast. Today, we're excited to welcome Josiah Johnson to the show. Josiah attended Montclair Prep, where he averaged 24 points and 12 rebounds, two assists and two blocks his senior year. He was named USA Honorable Mention All-American Selection, and he also played 2 years of varsity tennis. After Montclair Prep, Josiah attended UCLA from 2001 to 2005. While at UCLA, he embraced his roles as the energy giver, along with challenging his teammates every single day in practice. And upon graduating from UCLA, Josiah has worked with several TV production companies, with Fox Sports and the NFL Network. And now we'd like to welcome him on and kind of have him share a little bit more about his journey. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I appreciate you, Miles. That was a great intro, man. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate you doing the research.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks so much for coming on to share a little bit about yourself and kind of how you kind of exploded onto the scene, man. It's really cool to have watched. And if you could kind of start off and tell us what kind of, you know, got your love for the game and what got you started with basketball.
So, yeah, my dad played in the NBA for a number of years. Marcus Johnson played with the Milwaukee Bucks, the Clippers, and finished out his NBA career with the Golden State Warriors. So I just tell people, you know, growing up in Los Angeles, if your last name is Johnson, then it's a 99% chance that you're playing basketball and you're immersed in the game. So I remember being young, my first real experience is my dad played in an All-Star game in Dallas, I believe in 86. We came back and picked him up from LAX, and he had this mini Nerf hoop that he had brought back with him from the trip. And me and my older brother, Chris, we set that up in the den where we lived. And we basically, you know, made a janky full court in our den. So it was two hoops on different sides of the room. And we would play, you know, he's 7 years older than me. We would play one-on-one games, you know, being our favorite players during the time. So I remember, you know, Georgia Tech was hot back then. So I think he was like Kenny Anderson and I was Nick Anderson shooting threes and doing stuff. So we would just have, you know, a good time playing ball. And you know, we would keep stats and had jerseys and, you know, we would put the knee braces and the armbands and all that good stuff on, like MJ and the players going on around then. But always just being immersed in the game. And, you know, my dad was – I was young when my dad was playing in the league, and he ended up having a neck injury that kind of prematurely ended his career. But got to spend some time in Golden State. That's where he finished career at, playing with, you know, Tim Hardaway and Chris Mullin with Don Nelson as the head coach. So being able to hang out with Mully – and go to what is now Oracle Arena, was the Coliseum back then, and shag rebounds for him and just going there late at night to, you know, play and hoop and just be around the game, man. I think it's just something that's been immersed in my whole life. So it's just been a part of me since I was a little kid.
Awesome. Yeah, no, for sure. And I assume, yeah, definitely having that last name Johnson, that you got to be a basketball player.
You got to hoop. There's no other choice. If your dad's Marcus Johnson, I got – older brother, I got a bunch of younger siblings as well. They all hooped at different levels. My younger brothers all played college basketball. I got a young sister now, Shiloh, who's coming up in the game right now. She's gonna be a beast. So she's the next in line to carry on the lineage. But yeah, you know, definitely be on the lookout for her.
Absolutely, definitely will be, man. And you know, kind of when you said that, you know, what was it kind of like growing up in your household? But so did that mean that UCLA was kind of mandatory?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, there's a picture of me and my brother Chris. I think we went to like Magic Mountain or something way back in the day as kids and did like a little fake spoof photo shoot thing. But Chris is in a Lakers jersey. I'm in a UCLA jersey. And that's just kind of, you know, when we were in the house. My dad played for the Clippers, actually, but they didn't have a Clippers jersey there for picture day. But,
yeah,
you know, being spending a ton of time on campus, my dad, my older brother, in the summer times, we would just be there on the track and in the gym, the men's gym and Poly Pavilion, getting work in. And I actually went to elementary school on UCLA's campus. So, you know, I was, yeah, as a young kid, you know, literally a stone's throw away from Poly Pavilion and just being in that culture. I was a ball boy on the 1995 championship team that my brother was a freshman on. So being around guys like Ed O'Bannon, Toby Bailey, J.R. Henderson, Ty Zedney, who's actually our cousin, you know, hit the game winner over Missouri. It's just that's what the culture and world is. So I've been going to UCLA games since I was a little kid. Obviously was blessed to play there, still get to go to games now when the tickets are right.
For sure, absolutely. And while you were at UCLA, was there like the most memorable game that you could say that you were a part of?
I think, you know, we played in a bunch of good games. I didn't obviously play that much, but I had a few good games when I was there. I remember we beat Kansas when they were number one in the country. They came in and we smacked them up. Beating Arizona when they were number one in the country in the Pac-12 tournament. And, you know, like I said, I didn't play that much there, but I had a few games where I got to get some buckets and do some things. So just being a part of the whole culture experience, man, of just being a UCLA Bruin and being on that campus and being around just, you know, future Olympians and Hall of Famers and people that are going to be, you know, stars in a bunch of different sports. And just being there every day, just immersed in that culture and that world, man, is an experience I'll never forget.
Most definitely. Absolutely. And was there any memorable moments in practice that you could tell us about with some of your teammates?
Yeah, honestly, so a few moments come to mind. One, I used to do a scout team a lot, so that was actually great. And I remember we were playing Columbia, which is, you know, a small Ivy League school out in New York, but Columbia had this guy, I think it was a small forward, Craig, I forget what his last name is, but I got to beat him at scout, and his whole scout report, he just shoots three. So everybody's like, Josiah, anytime you get the ball, just shoot it. So I remember I was pissing my teammates off. I hit like 9 or 10 threes that practice. That like every, I would just, like, I couldn't miss. It was like honestly one of the best shooting days of my life. Like I honestly, yeah, like I, but the guys were getting pissed. Like, oh, you being a hero or whatever. It's like, look, bro, it's my time to shine. That's the scouting report. He shoots threes. What you want me to do? Like, you know, they said, whenever I touch the rock, put it up. So that was one of my favorite days. And you get kind of the raw end of the stick, too, when you were with guys who literally didn't shoot. So it was like, all right, just go set screens or do whatever. Mm-hmm. But another time, you know, I had some pretty good buckets. But my teammate, Matt Barnes, played in the NBA a number of years. Mm-hmm. We were on opposite teams, and he was driving down the lane, and I'm kind of stuck underneath the hoop. And deer in headlights, I don't get out of the way enough times. So he ends up yamming on me. And I remember just the whole team laughing. And I can look back on these moments now and crack up. Because like Kendrick Perkins said, you know, how my teammates supposed to respect me if I don't go try and contest and try and block shots and do whatever. But I just remember my point guard on my team, Jason Flowers, who's a good friend of mine, literally cracking up to the point where I couldn't even inbound him the ball. It took like 30 seconds for him to stop laughing so hard. And as I've gotten older in life, it's kind of, you know, it's a moment you learn just playing hoops. Like, you know, sometimes in life you're going to get embarrassed. Some things may not go your way, but you just got to pick yourself up and keep going and figure it out. And me and Matt are still good friends now. I still give him a hard time about that shit, but it was a tough point.
No, I love it though, man. The battles in practice, I would assume were phenomenal. And, you know, with Coach Lavin as well, and, you know, his history. Can you kind of talk about anything with Coach Lavin? Was he a mentor towards you or anything?
Yeah, Coach Lav, I've known Coach since I was a young kid. My brother played for him at UCLA. I got the chance to play for him as well for my first couple of years there. And I think the thing about Coach Lav is just an amazing human being, amazing individual, really big on, he used to really harp on us about, and we didn't really appreciate it as kids. When you're a kid, you think you know everything. Right. But a 50-year life plan, having a plan after college, after hoops, and really having an attitude of gratitude. And I remember all these sayings, now they're just ingrained in me, but really being appreciative of everything. You know, you got a guy, Lav, who even still, you know, he'll see people he hasn't seen 10, 15, 20 years, remembers their names, always respectful, and just teaching us just how to be polite. And also, Lav, I feel like, got a bad rap as a coach at UCLA, but he used to let us go out there and rock out. And, you know, really, you know, from an offensive standpoint, I think he was ahead of the curve and ahead of his time in terms of just letting, you know, a lot of college coaches kind of try to keep guys in their system and structure and don't really get guys ready to play in the pros and kind of, you know, get buckets and do things like that, where he was big on, you know, letting people cook. Like, yo, if you were hot and the offense was cooking, he was going to let you get your buckets. Wasn't going to really be super regimented in terms of offensive structure. But Just a great dude. Got still keep in touch with now to this day. So he's taught me so much just about being a man and about basketball and life. So I'm super appreciative to have the opportunity to play under Coach Lavin at UCLA.
Most definitely. No, that's awesome. I love that being ahead of the curve. And you can always tell with those teams, you know, UCLA had a different feel on offense, man. It was like, wow, watching guys, you know, go out and do what they do well. It's nice to see you play with that freedom. You mentioned that Coach Lavin would talk about having a plan after graduation. When did your interest in, you know, film and production kind of come about?
So I've been interested in that since I was a little kid. So I went to the school called UES, University Elementary School on UCLA's campus. Attended school with a bunch of, you know, people like Steven Spielberg's kids went there. There were grades beneath me, but I was good friends with this guy by the name of Jason Schwartzman, who's a successful actor now. And even back in third, fourth grade, I was taking film school in the summertime. We would go to his house. His mom is Talia Shire, who was Adrian in the Rocky movies, and she's been in Godfather and a bunch of other movies. So we would go hang out at his house. He would write scripts. We'd end up shooting these short films and just doing a bunch of cool, fun stuff. I remember me and him did basically a Lethal Weapons spoof as like 10-year-olds, where he was obviously the Mel Gibson character. I was the Danny Glover character. But just being around and immersed in it. My dad, when he played with the Clippers, his teammate, Norm Nixon, Norm's wife is Debbie Allen. Debbie, obviously one of the most, you know, famous showrunner, producer, directors, just, you know, everything, choreographers, just anything you could think of. So me and her kids were good friends. We would get picked up from school, went to elementary school together and go to the Different World set where she was, you know, directing episodes and producing and doing her thing. So just being around that world, I remember as a kid seeing a young Jada Pinkett who got added to the cast, I want to say in like season 4 or season 5, just seeing her and just be like, yo, she's so talented. And like, just the way she would steal scenes and how mesmerizing she was. And then now she's gone on to be one of the most prolific actresses in history. But just being around that world, Kadeem Hardison, Jasmine Guy, just all these people, you know, I would go see the shows getting taped and then 3 to 4 weeks later they would air on TV. So just seeing how the sausage was made in those situations. And then also my dad was an actor as well. So he was in White Man Can't Jump and Blue Chips and a bunch of other movies. So being on set for those things, I remember, you know, when he was auditioning for roles, we would help him read lines. So we'd have to read the scripts too. And we'd run lines with him to help get him prepped. So just having those scripts and, you know, seeing a White Man Can't Jump for the first time on a script and being like, this is not a real movie title, is it? Even as like an 8-9-year-old, this is like, and then seeing the movie come out, seeing his scene, plays Raymond, the character that robs a liquor store. So seeing how iconic that role is. And it's funny, he was a 5-time All-Star College Player of the Year, but people remember him more now for that role as Raymond than they do from his basketball exploits. But like I said, so basketball and entertainment growing up in LA, those two things, you know, are just going to be ingrained in you. So being on Hollywood sets and just being around so many talented, famous people, and to the point where, and it's not to brag or boast, but when you live in the city, you look at it differently. Like a lot of people come to LA, you know, see Hollywood and see those things and they get overwhelmed by it. But when you're just in that world and you're actually on set, you start realizing like, damn, we've been on set for like 6, 8, 9, 10 hours. It ain't as fun and glamorous as it appears when you see the finished product and actually the hard work that goes into it. I think you appreciate things a little bit more.
Most definitely. No, that's great to hear. And I can fully see that. Like I have a friend out in LA that's kind of, you know, mentioned small scale, but you know, I know that when I was out there, I was kind of like starstruck a little bit. So that definitely makes sense. Would you be able to tell us a little bit kind of about your show Chamberlain Heights? Like how did that kind of come about? I saw that it was with a college teammate. Where did the idea start in college, or how did it all kind of come about?
So we were legendary bench warmers at UCLA, me, Quinn Hawking, Ike Williams, my close friends. So the show was bred out of those experiences. It's funny, man. Me and Quinn started working in entertainment after college, doing a bunch of different things. I was working in sports production for NFL Network and Fox Sports, doing that type of stuff. Then we started a website called Jersey Chaser, which was a sports blog we just did in our spare time. But we always saw things, you know, presented in a way that was kind of condescending towards athletes. So we wanted to support the athletes, have their back. So we used that site to be kind of motivational, inspirational for athletes and always like, you know, get our jokes in, of course, but skew everything from the athlete perspective. You know, this was back in the day when the norm was to say that college athletes didn't deserve to get paid and all these pro athletes are prima donnas and they're, you know, and it's like, well, shit, who's writing their checks? Well, the thing I always used to say, like they're getting their checks written by somebody. We never talk about ownership or anything like that. you know, it's always kind of just us on the player. So created that website, did a bunch of off-kilter funny content, got the attention of a couple guys working in animation. They reached out about a project they were trying to work on, you know, kind of similar to like Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids that they want to do for LeBron. Quinn and I politely, you know, told them that that wouldn't be anything we were rocking with. Just our humor was super raunchy, and LeBron's my favorite player, but you can't, you know, LeBron in raunchy comedy, it's not, that's not his brand. He's wholesome. He's a family man. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
So they asked us if we had any other ideas. So I pitched them just on, you know, a show potentially on our experience at UCLA on the end of the bench, just how much fun we would have during games. We had to kill time and, you know, you're not going to get in. So just how do you maximize and enjoy it? I think we've seen it in recent times with like Monmouth's like benched crew and how hard they were going. We were getting that off in the early 2000s. So when I see teams like that, and it's like our whole motto was you don't have to be a star to shine. So, you know, during games or whatever, we know the camera angles and positioning, you know, when the red light's on in the camera, that means that you're on TV. So we would always just do dumb stuff to make sure that we got noticed, you know, whether that's taking our uniforms off to make it look like we played or whatever it may be, you know, just having a good time. So that laid the foundation for that show. Was blessed to get 2 seasons of that show on Comedy Central, working with an amazing, amazing crew, like people like Michael Starberry, who's a close friend of mine, who, you know, was Emmy nominated for When They See Us. He was a showrunner on Colin in Black and White, another show that I was a writer and producer on. Carl Jones, who's immensely talented, worked on Boondocks. Erica Badu, who was our music supervisor in addition to Frank Ciampi. Both just, you know, legends in that regard, and having Erica around to do voices on the show. And just, you know, I grew up on Badu, so being in her presence, like she just would, you know, she illuminates a room, and just her essence, her aura, it's like some real, like when Badu walks in a room, you feel that aura. Like that's one of the few people that I get starstruck over, just how amazingly talented she is. And just seeing, working with her in real life, seeing her be able to take a scene and come up with a song that perfectly fits it. Even like she was coming up with parody spoof songs literally in a day. And it's just like, yo, you're literally the most talented human being I think I've ever seen. So having those experiences, Devon Shepherd, who was our showrunner on that project, just a messy town of people, Jay Farrow, Tiffany Haddish, Jamie Kennedy, Neil Brennan, who, you know, created Chappelle's Show with Dave Chappelle and is, you know, a huge inspiration for me in my life. So just being around these type of human beings and just their essence, their creative juices, man, I think, you know, probably one of the greatest experiences of my life. Like I said, we ran for 2 seasons, wish we could have ran longer. That just wasn't in the cards, but super thankful for the opportunity that I did get to be on television and do that.
Most definitely. No, it's a show that I'm running back now. So I will say, man, funny as hell, love it. And my good friend introduced me to it. So that's kind of where I got my start. So now I guess, you know, just to kind of talk a little bit of, would you be able to share a little bit about your time that you work with Gilbert Arenas?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm doing the No Chill with Gilbert Arenas podcast with Gil. Gil's a guy from San Fernando Valley, a guy I grew up watching. I remember the first time, or one of the first times I saw Gil, it was my sophomore year in high school. I was at Crenshaw High. He was at Grant. They were playing Crenshaw in the first round of the playoffs. I think Gil dropped like 42 on Crenshaw, but Crenshaw had this, you know, notorious for this full court press that they would run that literally would just stifle guards and lock them up. Gil was breaking the press single-handedly, going coast to coast. And I'm just like, this dude, you know, Grant's a small school, and, you know, it's not a big name school by any stretch of the imagination. I was like, who is this dude? This dude is killing us right now. And then, you know, later on going to see Gil at Arizona, and just Gil for me is a dude that I've always respected, admired, and, you know, somebody I'm just blessed to have the opportunity to work with. I think he's a basketball savant. The way he understands the game, the way he looks at it, the way he analyzes it, is like nobody I've really ever seen or been around. So when the opportunity arose for me to jump on, I think this is the show's now in its third season. So when the opportunity arose for me to get on with Gil and be able to participate in the show, I jumped at it like no brainer. And for me, just to be like, you know, we had CP3, DeMar DeRozan, Kuz, just all types of big name guys on there. But to hear the way that they talk, you know, for somebody who didn't play in the league, you know, and I've been around the league my whole life, but I always say that, you know, there's nothing that replicates being in the league. So you get a lot of analysts nowadays who try to pretend like they know and are very opinionated, but you don't know until you know, like I've practiced at the high school and college level. Those were beasts. I can only imagine what it's like playing 4 games in 5 days and back-to-backs and just the mental strain and physical strain of playing an 82-game season and playoffs and all that stuff. So to be able to hang out with Gil, talk to these guys, get inside their mind, you know, the lighter side as well, in addition to the hoops chalk, is a, you know, a tremendous opportunity and blessing. I'm super thankful to Gil and Fubo for giving me the opportunity to rock out with them on the show.
Hell yeah, man. It's a great show. And does that ever make you, do you ever have a coaching itch? Do you ever think about that ever?
I would probably suck as a coach. I'm way too laid back and even keeled and just a funny dude and like to take moves. Like, so I know if I'm trying to get serious with my players, they're just going to crack up at me and I'm going to make me start laughing too. But I never really had that desire to want to get into that lane. I definitely respect the people that do get into it. It's such a full-time heavy commitment that it's hard to just, you know, immerse yourself in that world and have to be a coach. When you're a coach, you're a coach, right? That's like, that's beyond a full-time job. Like, full-time jobs are 40 hours a week. Coaching, I'd say, is closer to 90 to 100 hours a week, every week, you know, really from when you start to you end the rest of your life. So never something I fully got immersed in, but definitely have a tremendous amount of respect for everybody who's in that lane.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I guess, like, when I started, I guess when I was looking on Twitter, saw in 2019, Jordan Peele responded to you. What was that like?
Phenomenal. Jordan Peele, you talk about another person, you know, Key and Peele was one of my favorite shows. I think they really extended that, you know, not the same show as Chappelle's show, but just in terms of, you know, humor and satire and sketch comedy. Guys, you know, they won an Emmy, just an amazing duo. So Jordan Peele is somebody I really looked up to in my space. Also, from the standpoint, when you work in Hollywood, there's a tendency to get typecasted. So if you're a comedy guy, you can just do comedy. If you're a drama guy, you can just do drama. Don't even think about coming over to the other side. And what he was able to do from a comedy standpoint was amazing. Also with movies like Get Out and Us and just other things he's been able to accomplish with Monkey Paw Productions, his company, is tremendously inspiring, especially for Black creatives and Black creators in this space, where Hollywood, you know, if it ain't a slave movie or a gang movie or things like that, it's so hard to get something made. So just to know that he had Get Out for 10 years that he was trying to sell and nobody would give him the time of day. And then eventually he rose to a level where, you know, he got the respect that he deserved and was able to make the movie that he wanted to make. And then you see the success of that film and all the awards and accolades that it got. Now that opened the door to him to do whatever he wants. So when he quote tweeted me, I used the scene from Get Out basically to talk about Antonio Brown when he went to the Patriots. I thought, you know, Josh Gordon had been there. Josh Gordon, one of my favorite players in the game, you know, somebody I just respect tremendously. He was a fan of Legend of Chamberlain Heights, so I had to rock with him from that point forward. But I just said, you know, the Patriots do things differently. So what's it going to be like for Antonio Brown when he gets there? And, you know, I jokingly had Josh Gordon in the sunken place. That's Lakeith Stanfield's character in the movie. Mm-hmm. Put, you know, made a meme out of it. Peele ends up seeing it, you know, gives me a ton of love. Ends up following me. We DM each other. I'm just, you know, get the opportunity to thank him firsthand is for all the pathways and blazing trails for people like myself to follow behind. And I'm just a human being, man, that's super grateful and appreciative. And like I said, coming back from Coach Lab, having that attitude of gratitude to be thankful, even for somebody like yourself who reaches out to me to come on a pod like this, man. I'm so thankful for people, you know, in this game, in this world who rock with me, who give me opportunities. So just to be able to do that, man, is something that's tremendous to me. And obviously getting love from Jordan Peele, getting love from LeBron, you know, the people that have given me love, it's like, it's not anything I take for granted. And I feel like people on the outside who don't know me, I think see these things happen and think I'm gonna get a big head or he's arrogant or cocky. It's like anybody who knows me knows I'm always a jokester. I'm just cracking jokes, keeping the mood light and really use humor as a coping mechanism and for satirical purposes, especially, you know, the experience of Black men and women in America is one that is very, very difficult and irrational. Like I say, we try to rationalize an irrational existence and experience, you're just gonna drive yourself crazy. So for me, just to keep the mood light, stay humble always, and just be so thankful for all the opportunities that I get.
Most definitely. And, you know, you were talking about being writing with Colin in Black and White. I was adopted by a white family. My parents were white as a baby. So I that show really stuck with me and kind of his experiences. What was it like, you know, kind of going through that with Colin and writing that? What was it like?
I mean, when you look at Colin, I'm a Raiders fan, and I'd say this, Colin is the only human being that'll ever have me wearing a Niners jersey, and I wear it proudly if it's a Kaepernick jersey. I remember when this thing first went down in 2016, he had my full support, because I just think, you know, everybody tried to make it something different, tried to bash him as a man, and, you know, all this crazy stuff, you know, talking about his character and all this stuff, and it's like, you know, when you sit and talk with Colin and just are around him and get to experience who he is as a human being, you just understand who he is and how everybody looks at, you know, the situations from a couple of years ago, and, oh, it just came out of nowhere. And it's like, no, this stuff was always in him. He just didn't know how to communicate it. So to understand his story, getting adopted by two white parents who were living in Wisconsin, end up moving to Turlock, California. People hear California, and California is a blue state, you know, but there's definitely several parts of California that aren't blue. And, you know, Turlock, I feel like, is definitely one of those where it's a lot more conservative, a lot more behind the times, if you will. So just to know Colin's experiences growing up out there and what life was like for him as a black child with two white parents. And I feel like his parents did a tremendous job in raising him, but there was just things they simply didn't understand and know. And I think this show was able to really highlight and show some of the difficulties and situations that go on, you know, when parents are parenting children of a different race. And Colin, just to his credit, to be able to open himself up to us, and he's somebody who's obviously super secretive, super guarded in terms of just, you know, from the public light and how he's treated and viewed in that space, to be able to open up, tell these stories, to be around him, you know, just to be able to experience everything going on. I'm a humongous fan of Colin, and I will cherish those memories and moments forever. And it's so great. We started working on that room in 2019, and obviously COVID hit, and, you know, definitely, you know, stymied and crippled production and slowed the process down. But now to see the finished product out there, to see what the response has been largely positive. The people that we want to love the show, the people that we wanted to hate the show, which I think is awesome when you seek to do that, set out to do that. It really helped to inspire, motivate. And, you know, I can't tell you how many, you know, white parents have reached out just like, oh man, I just really appreciate learning these type of things that I maybe did not know. And, you know, you can't be, you know, ashamed of things you don't know. Once you learn them, you can learn to improve on those things. And I think we want to just open up a discourse, start a discussion around different topics that, you know, somebody like yourself could even relate to, which I'm sure in your life you had to deal with situations as a black man with white parents, you know, just having to go out and do things, going to the store, simple things like that, and kind of getting the looks and whatever goes on from people that just don't quite understand, man. And, you know, I know your parents, you know, I can't speak for them. I'm sure they loved you and raised you well. And obviously, you know, in our short, limited interaction with each other, you're extremely professional, extremely polite. And like, you know, somebody like when you reach out, you know, people reach out for me to do stuff all the time. But when you reach out and you do it in a respectful manner, I'm always happy to oblige and come jump on. Like I said, I appreciate every opportunity to do some things, man. And even just join you now, you well researched, you know your stuff. You came through with some great solid questions, man. So I just appreciate getting on and working on that show. Thankful to Netflix and Colin and Ava DuVernay, who Ava, you know, just being in her presence and being you, when you're around Ava, you can understand why she's so tremendously successful. Yeah. She runs an extremely tight ship. She demands excellence from people that work with her. And I think, you know, just the entire writing staff and team that we had in place, production crew, everybody feel like delivered, man. It's crazy to see scripts you write, you know, and then you don't see those things for a while. And then you see the finished product and it's like, damn, I know how to write this thing that good. So it's like she takes that and just puts her Ava spin on it, works that Ava magic to get it to where it needs to be. And, you know, makes us all look like, you know, we're the most talented human beings in the world. So I'm so super thankful for that opportunity.
Yeah, no, don't sell yourself short at all, man. You guys are all phenomenal and super talented. And like I said, it really did touch my life, and it was able to give me words to what I felt my whole life, as opposed to just being mad at people for not understanding. So for that, I really do appreciate. And, you know, I know you got to get rolling and I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but if you have a second, would you just kind of tell us a little bit about what you're doing now with your producing and hosting with Buckets?
I'm doing so much stuff. I got two kids I got to keep fed, so I got to keep the grind going. Yeah. So I'm hosting a show called Out of Pocket on Bucket's Twitter handle and with Wave TV. Also available on Bucket's YouTube and Instagram accounts. Tremendously great program. We take, you know, NBA Twitter and everything going on in the world, put our unique spin on it. As the name suggests, we get a little out of pocket with the humor and the comedy at times. I've had to peel back a little bit since I've gotten older. Also doing the No Chill with Gilbert Arenas podcast for Fubo TV. Developing a bunch of stuff behind the scenes. I have a few shows in development that I'm super, super juiced and excited about. So I just try to stay busy, man. Try to keep these lights on and really just be humble and be thankful for the opportunities. Also doing the stuff in the social space. So got some things I'm working on that side as well, just to you know, the people are going to be surprised about. But also want to show people that you can do a bunch of different stuff. You can be a washed up hooper at UCLA or wherever you go that goes on to create TV shows and, you know, work with Emmy level talent and award-winning producers, creative directors, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, no, it's definitely really inspiring, and I really appreciate you taking this little bit of time to come on because I know how busy you are. I follow all your stuff, so I really do appreciate you taking the time to come on and share a bit about what your story has been. It's been awesome, and I wish you all the best, and I hope we can stay in contact. If you ever want to come on the show again, we'd love to have you.
Hit me up, bro. Let me know. I'm always down. If time permits, I'm down to pull up.
Definitely, brother. I appreciate you again, man, and we'll definitely stay in contact.